Cool. Well, this is How to Empower Others. If you're in the wrong one, it's probably too late, but just for you to know, that's the one we're in. What I want to talk about today, I think it hopefully will just be a really practical way to see how even people in your group that you don't feel like could do anything helpful might could do something really helpful, and maybe we just don't realize it. Before we get started, thank you guys so much for what you do. Your job is very hard and very frustrating a lot of the time, and we know that, and we're thankful that you're fighting through it, that you're hanging in there. Your job is hard for, I think, a couple of good reasons. The first one is y'all are leading people towards something that I don't think a lot of people know is a thing. So a Jesus-centered family on mission, I know a lot of people in your group probably are not even aware that that's a thing that exists. And I think for a lot of people that maybe do believe it exists, it kind of just seems very idealistic. It doesn't seem like it can actually happen in your group. And that's hard to lead people towards. And so thank you for persisting and hanging in there. We are incredibly thankful for you guys and couldn't do this without you. So wanted to make sure you heard that loud and clear. If you haven't already, there's no way that we could possibly say that enough. So what I want to talk about tonight is maybe one reason that our jobs are hard that we aren't aware is actually an unnecessary thing. So what I want to do talk real fast from Exodus chapter 18. If you've got that, I want to flip to it on your phone. You can. I'll read it, though. Also, just fair warning, I choked on some water earlier, and I haven't been able to talk since. So drinking water is hard, you guys. All right, so this is Exodus 18, starting in verse 23. The next day, Moses set to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning until evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people stand around you from morning until evening?" And Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, they come to me and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws." Moses' father-in-law said to him, "What you are doing is not good," which everyone wants to hear from their father-in-law. "You and the people will certainly wear yourself out, for the thing is too heavy for you." You might want to underline this next verse if you write in your Bibles. "You are not able to do it alone. You are not able to do it alone. Now obey my voice. I will give you advice and God will be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God, and you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them known the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide for themselves. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will direct you. You will be able to endure, and all this people will also go to their place in peace." So Moses' father-in-law gives him some very kingly advice. We've been talking about how to lead like a king. This is some of the most kingly advice in the Bible, I think. Jethro looks over his son-in-law's shoulder as he does his job, which has to be fun for Moses. And he says, "Hey, part of the reason that you're worn out is because you're at the middle of everything. So everything is centered around you. You have to decide among every case. You have to have your hand in everything. And that's part of the reason you're so worn out. You're wearing yourself out. You're wearing out the people around you." And I think what he's starting to say is it's actually good for people to have responsibility. Now, he doesn't just say give some random jabroni in your crowd any kind of responsibility. He doesn't say that. He actually says do it according to their ability. So put some in charge of thousands, some in charge of hundreds, some in charge of tens. But he says what's actually helpful is to give people in your congregation, in your very large life group, give them some responsibility. One pastor I know says that people are like trucks. They drive straighter with a load. People are like trucks. They drive straighter with a load. So if you're familiar with like using a larger truck to haul anything, any length of distance, what you know is if you don't put anything in the truck, it's very hard to drive the truck. The wind catches it. It's very hard to drive straight. But if you put stuff in the truck, it's fulfilling its intended purpose. You're actually hauling stuff, and the weight actually helps the truck to drive straighter. So what I think we can learn from that as life group leaders is that we can give anybody some kind of responsibility. Maybe not a lot at first, or for some people, maybe a lot. But they're actually going to benefit from it. By giving somebody responsibility, you're actually helping them to fulfill a God-given purpose that they have. Everybody should have some type of responsibility. It's actually better for them and helps them grow. So what Jethro is saying to Moses is that by not empowering people, by not giving people responsibility, you're actually making things exhausting for yourself and for other people, but also people around you aren't going to get to grow because we're never giving them responsibility. So what I want to do is do something that I never do, which is use a sports analogy to help you teach you to do this. All the guys on staff would tell you I'm the worst person to do a sports analogy, but we're going to give it a shot and see how it goes. So if you've ever played baseball, like even as a small child, raise your hand. Played baseball? So good many people. If you played baseball as a child, what style of baseball did you start at?
T-ball,
absolutely. Mark, explain T-ball to us.
Instead of the ball being thrown at you, the ball's put on a stick.
Yep. So pretty simple. Yeah. Somebody puts the ball on a stand, a tee, and they can actually lower and higher the stand to actually put it right in your strike zone so that it's in the perfect place for you to be able to hit it. The goal is that you might learn how to hit a ball that's in your strike zone. Well, I think a lot of us, when that comes to life group leading, not everybody in your group can do everything, but everybody can do something. Everybody in your life group can do something. Everybody has a strike zone. Now, their strike zone may be super spiritual, or it may be very practical and not spiritual at all. Some of you have people that aren't even Christians in your life group, so obviously they're not going to have a spiritual strike zone that they can thrive in, but they're absolutely going to be good at something. So what you want to do is find out what somebody's strike zone is, put the ball in their strike zone, and just encourage them to swing. So I've got one guy in my life group who he doesn't do good in big group settings. So if there's more than three people in a room, he tries to talk and no sound comes out. So he's just very, very quiet, very, very reserved. And anytime there's a big group, he kind of just locks up. But what he's absolutely wonderful at is one-on-one conversations. He's great at one-on-one conversations. If you spend 5 minutes with him, you'll feel more cared for than you have in a long, long time because he asks really good questions. He just thrives in that environment. And he gets really, really goofy, which is funny because if you met him, you wouldn't even think he was a goofy guy. But just in one-on-one scenarios, he thrives. So what I'm going to do for him is I'm going to go, hey, man, why don't you contact two guys per week and find a way to have a one-on-one conversation with each one of them. Get breakfast with them a couple different mornings, go grab lunch with them, just find a way to hang out because you are really, really good at one-on-one conversations. I want you to spend time with them and eventually our whole life group is going to benefit from him spending one-on-one time with certain people. Because what I did is I took the ball, I put it in his strike zone and I just said, dude, swing. Swing as hard as you can. And he's going to do great at it. So specifically with him, I'm going to do that. Now, maybe a lot of you have people in your life group, like I said, that aren't even Christians yet, or maybe they just became a Christian. They may not have a super spiritual strike zone that you're going to be able to put them in so that they can hit. But what you can do, maybe they just make an awesome brownie. Like they just really know how to make brownies and they do a good job. Put them in charge of bringing food every week. Let them have the responsibility of deciding what y'all are going to eat every week, and I guarantee you everyone will love it. So, T-ball, you put the ball in their strike zone, you let them swing. Now, in order to do this, you're going to have to know what people's strike zones are. You're going to have to spend some time getting to know what are people good at in my group. Somebody in the first crew of people that came through here said that they just wanted to sit down one night and write down every person's name in their group and have the next column over be what is that person good at. And I'm just going to sit down and I'm going to write this person's good at this, this person's good at this. I don't know what this person's good at, so I'm going to figure it out. What is each person in your group good at? What's their strike zone? All right, what do you play after T-ball?
Coach's pitch.
Coach's pitch. Ethan, what is coach's pitch?
It's when your dad goes up there throwing some pitch underhand to you.
Nice. So coach's pitch is a little bit different. The ball's not standing still anymore. It's moving. But in coach's pitch, the person who's pitching is not trying to strike you out, right? They're actually trying to throw a really good pitch to you so that you can hit. But it's a little bit harder. You're stretching people a little bit. There's a moving target, so it's a little bit more difficult, and you're actually forcing people to grow a little. For some of us, we've got some people in our groups that have been functioning in their strike zone playing T-ball for a long time, and we need to stretch them a little bit. We need to get them to a place where they're doing something that they're a little bit uncomfortable with, and it'll actually help them grow. So I've got one guy in my group who loves studying Greek. He's a seminary grad. He can pick apart every phrase that's in the Bible. He probably knows more Bible than I will ever know, and I'm totally fine with that. He does that, but he really struggles with application, really struggles with applying the Bible. He could go on for an hour about what Jesus meant by one sentence that Jesus said, but when I say, how does that apply to your life, he struggles really bad with that. So for him, what I'm going to do, what coach's pitch looks like for him, is I'm going to go, hey man, I want you to lead our group time for the next month, but every single week I want you to come in with a list of 5 practical applications of this passage, and you're only allowed to spend 10 minutes on unpacking the Greek in the passage, and you have to spend the rest of the time applying the passage to people's lives. And he might struggle with that. He might need to call me the night before, and we might need to talk through what are some applications. But it's gonna get him to grow so much in his ability to be a leader, to be able to apply the Bible and the gospel to people's lives. And so what I'm doing is, it's a little bit harder. He's still kind of in his strike zone. I'm still making sure he's going to hit because I'm getting him to lead a Bible study for us. But I'm forcing him to grow a little bit, giving him a moving target so that he can be stretched and so that he can grow. The goal of all these things is that eventually people would be able to play real baseball. So in real baseball, the person who's pitching to you is not trying to help you hit the ball. They're trying to make sure you miss. They're trying to strike you out. A lot of you guys are really familiar with that because you're life group leaders. Most of the people in your group are not trying to make your job easy. So what that means is you're playing the big game now. You're playing baseball. And the goal with all of this is that people would eventually get to baseball. They'd eventually be in a place where even when people are trying to strike them out, even when people are running from them, even when people are not making it easy on them, they'll know how to play the game. And that doesn't mean, none of this means you'll never strike out. I've seen a kid swing at a tee for hours and not hit the ball. And that's fine because he's growing. He's going to get better even if it looks awful at first. And so bear in mind with all of this, every failure is an opportunity to teach. Every single failure is an opportunity to teach somebody. If they're just standing at the tee and they cannot even get halfway to the ball, that is fine. You get to teach them. You get to ask them, hey, what's going on here? How can I help? What are we missing here? So a couple just practical questions for you to be asking yourself just to help apply this to your group. Who in your life group do you need to get to know? Who in your life group do you need to get to know? Specifically so that you can figure out what their strike zone is. Who's in your group right now that you're just like, man, I don't know what they're good at. I don't know them well enough to know what they're good at. How can you spend some time with them and figure out what they're good at, even if it's not spiritual, even if it's practical? So who do you need to get to know? Number 2, who in your life group is ready for some T-ball? Who in your group is ready for T-ball? So who in your group do you know, oh, I know something right now that they're really, really good at that I could actually set them up to succeed? Who's ready for some T-ball? Number 3, who in your life group would benefit from moving on to coach's pitch? Who needs to move on to coach's pitch? Who's been doing the one thing that they're good at for a long, long time, and it would actually be really, really good for them to be stretched a little bit, to give them a moving target to try to hit? And how can you do that? So who's ready for coach's pitch? What questions or comments do you have? Can you picture people in your head right now that are ready for each one? Like, are there people in your group that you're going, yeah, I think they could be ready for that? Uh-oh.
Yeah, it just depends on, like, specifically what steps to take and, like,
sure. You
know, what areas. So it's, like, in my head, yeah, but it's more like, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's some encouragement. There's one guy in my life group. I don't think he's a Christian yet. But he got really, really passionate about the idea of playing trivia. On Monday nights, he just loved that idea of rhythms. So I was like, dude, every week I want you to be in charge of texting all the guys, figuring out who's coming, and getting us a table that's big enough. Since you're passionate about this, I want you to do it. For the first 3 weeks, he did not send out a text. And so what we did is we sat down, and I literally showed him on his iPhone how to set reminders that would go off every single Monday at noon and say, text life group guys about trivia. He never missed another Monday. And so, literally, it can be as small as that. And you know what happened? We regularly got together on Monday nights more often, and it wasn't a last-minute thing where people couldn't come because they didn't know until I texted them at 6. But he also grew an organization. All of a sudden, I talked to him the other day, and he was like, dude, I have reminders on my phone for everything now. And I forget I don't forget near as many things as I used to because I just set reminders for everything. And my wife is way more happy with me because I remember stuff. And so, legitimately, he grew an organization just because we gave him some responsibility and asked him to run with it. So it can be as small as that. Don't feel like it has to be something huge. Cool? Time's up. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man.